Oh man, this just keeps getting weirder, doesn't it? Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Simply Amazing. I'm Tim Ryder from the Apple, and yeah, this is something else. The Mets swept a doubleheader from the Rockies at Citi Field on Thursday, riding another outstanding start from Marcus Stroman, a handful of terrific defensive plays around the diamond, close win in game one. The bench mob struck again, and the bullpen did too, in game two, and it was a good day. It was a very good Thursday. It was a decent week, all things considered. You know, all things considered is a heavy phrase in this case. The Mets were dealt another major blow on the health front on Thursday. Lost Jhinnestre Vargas to the IL with a AC joint sprain from running into the wall too. But Mets manager Louis Rojas announced that Noah Syndergaard will be shutting all baseball activity down for the next 6 weeks. After experiencing soreness in his surgically repaired right elbow during his rehab start in Port St. Lucie on Tuesday. An MRI revealed no structural damage, but the right-hander is he's not expected to come back until at the very least August. Rojas said, and I quote here, they're praying he pitches this season, and that's just a gut punch all the way. With Carlos Carrasco still working his way back from a torn hamstring, Taijuan Walker, is only approaching his return now. I think he could be starting Friday's series opener at home versus Atlanta. That's still to be announced. Louis Rojas said that ahead of game one. I'm recording this after game two. You know, the Mets are going to continue to lean on their second string back half of the rotation as opposed to the five-headed monster that everyone had in mind come June. It's a blow. You know, the situation keeps evolving, but, you know, it hasn't really slowed things down, and slowly but surely you're going to get guys back. And, you know, Seth Lugo, he's expected back from the IL at some point over the next week or so. You know, some of the discourse on Twitter on Thursday was regarding his usage upon his return. And, you know, Lugo's unquestionably, I can't talk today. I've been more effective throughout his career as a reliever. I'm not even going to pull up the stats. I've written this article like a dozen times. It's a landslide. He's just better as a relief pitcher. That said, under these circumstances, especially if Carrasco's easing back into things and he's already had a, let's not call it a setback. That's pretty much the Mets' motto this year. We're not going to call it a setback. But under these circumstances, I'd give Lugo a look at the very least as like a long man piggyback type of guy. Almost in the same vein as Joey Lucchese or Sean Reed Foley or even Robert Gzelman, who, you know, they've used him in that situation when necessary. You know, it adds versatile depth, which is pretty much all this team is running on these days. You know, if Lugo can eat three innings at a time, that's a very good thing. If he can swing four or five, even better, but let's not chance it. You know, there doesn't have to be a tag on every single guy that the Mets run out there. The Mets have starting pitchers. The Mets have relief pitchers. They even have guys that can pitch in certain spots, certain specific situations. They make it work, and that's pretty much where they're at right now, just making it work. And for, you know, for all intents and purposes, they're doing it. That's the crazy thing. They're actually pulling it off. You know, after losing three in a row, Jacob deGrom returned on Tuesday from his lower side back tightness, struck out 9 Rockies over 5 innings. He needed just 63 pitches to do it. Safe to say he's back. I think his ERA actually increased to 0.80 on the year, and he still leads the league by almost like half a run. I think Carlos Rodon is at like 1.3 or 1.29 or something like that. So, you know, just as Jake does, he gets things moving again. But again, that was the same night that we got the news on Syndergaard. And, you know, we've said it so many times on the show already. It's one step forward, one step back. Expecting to have Syndergaard back over the next month or so, that was huge, especially with the reports that have been coming out of his rehab. You know, he's hitting 98, he's feeling good. And then during his rehab start on Tuesday, he went from throwing 96, 97 to 89, 90, and he was out of the game at the end of the inning. And, you know, we all know what that means. And the Mets downplayed it, of course. And, of course, you know, a couple of days later, we get the news. And this is nothing new. But now it's kind of how does the team react, which we're going to get to in a little bit. But Jacob DeGrom came back, and, the news came out before the game. I think by the end of the game, or at least, it wasn't, at least for me personally, it wasn't totally forgotten, but it was at the back of my mind. Of course, that all came rushing back once you, oh yeah, that's right, Noah. Anyway, so, he got things back on track. So after Wednesday's rain out, and those were some awesome thunderstorms that passed through our area, by the way, it was great. Marcus Stroman and Joey Lucchese were tabbed to kind of move things along and did so more than effectively. Stroman in particular on Thursday. It's funny. He just like toys with guys, doesn't he? I think he got 10 ground ball outs in the win. He came into the game with the fourth best ground ball rate in the majors, 53.6%. We've talked about it here in the past plenty. Very high on Marcus Stroman here. I said it in February. I don't know if you guys were listening. I said it on Twitter, too. He was my pick as a dark horse Cy Young candidate. Of course, Jacob DeGrom is the clubhouse leader, and I was asked for a hot take. That was my hot take. But, he doesn't just – I think we've had this conversation here. We've talked a little bit about Stroman just pitching to contact. He's not going after strikeouts. He's pitching to contact. And the best part is that he's actively pursuing soft contact. During Ryan McMahon's at bat, during the sixth on Thursday, and Ryan McMahon had an awesome series for the Rockies. If he's one of those guys that's pliable, which is very, very doubtful, man, he's versatile. He plays like three defensive positions, first, second, and third. Just a terrific, terrific ball player. So he singled off of Stroman in the first. One of the few guys to make solid or even get base hits off of Stroman's split change. So rest of the game, Stroman, I think he threw him one more split change the entire game. He's always, it's chess, not checkers with Marcus Stroman. We know this. So during Ryan McMahon's, I think he was leading off the sixth. Stroman went upstairs with a two-strike cutter. And like, if you look at McMahon's heat zones on StatCast, one of his highest average exit velocity zones is middle-high. So middle of the strike zone, high in the strike zone. Stroman, he threw a cutter that almost, it almost teased McMahon. I got it here. So likely knowing that he could draw McMahon, he could, at least get him to commit to something close to that target area for him as a hitter. He got his cutter to just kind of dance just north of that zone. And it was a swing and miss. And, that's the type of approach that, one, hitters aren't used to. They're used to guys blowing shit past him. And Marcus Stroman does not take that approach because he doesn't throw, 99 miles an hour. He takes a more subtle approach, and he has the arsenal to back it up, and he has, the pitch shapes and the sequences and the memory like a fucking elephant. I'm sorry, I'm trying not to curse so much, but it is what it is. I get into it. Just to remember what he gave guys last time and what they hit him. I'm sure this is probably commonplace for a major league pitcher or for any major leaguer just to, have these mental notes or just keep track of these things. But boy, just digging through them. And if I went through the examples, we'd be here for a couple of hours. But, looking at some of the guys that he's faced more than once with the Mets, or I should say, of course, more than once, but, let's say 30 at bats or 30 plate appearances. Oh, the sequences that he throws at these guys. There's someone on the Braves. I want to say it was Markakis. He saw Markakis twice in 2019. And Markakis, I want to say, hit him kind of hard once early. Then later in the season, last game of the season, or second to last game of the season, whatever he started, just completely changed his approach and he baffled him. Just, I know it's one small example and I got way off track, but it is what it is. So he got McMahon. It was a really big strikeout, and that's kind of what Marcus Stroman does. He's not just firing away out there. He has intent behind every pitch. He's out there fielding this position. He's go ahead, bunt on him because he's going to get you out. Go ahead, try to attack, and he's going to trick you because you're going to see what you think is a sinker or a cutter coming at you because he replicates his spin. We talked about this with Lucchesi last week, but Stroman does the same thing. And if you caught the SNY game, the SNY broadcast on Thursday, after Lucchesi came out, Stroman's right there, and you can read his lips. He's telling him to breathe. You can see him breathing with him. Just telling him to relax. Like, that's the leadership. This is the whole package that Stroman brings, and you really have to consider after the almost, let's say, third of a season maybe that he's put up so far. You really have to consider approaching him about an extension. I know I would. I wouldn't blame him if he wants to test the market. He's certainly going above and beyond to set himself up for a very nice payday. But boy, if I'm the Mets, this is the quintessential number two who's just consistent and goes out there and he doesn't walk guys and he's confident. And that confidence just exudes through the clubhouse. It's just, if I had to build a pitching staff, if I'm a general manager and I have to build a pitching staff and I have one guy to pick who, you can go spend money on a guy, but he's not going to, it's not a, a Bauer contract. It would be a Marcus Stroman, and I'd give him whatever that B-level contract, not even a B-level. It's like a 1A or a 1B, like just crazy. I'd back up the truck for him, but that's just me. So in the second game, as we were just saying, Lucchesi went out. He did well. I guess 3.2, one earned run after he exited. And the Mets, they scored just enough again. I think Jose Peraza's home run stood up in the first game. It was 1-0. He had two RBIs in the second game, and that's pretty huge. That's what all of these guys have been doing. Billy McKinney, acquired from Milwaukee earlier in the week, he's making an impact. Made a couple of really great catches throughout the day on Thursday. Added a double, his first hit with the Mets in game two. It's kind of been this team's MO, just next man up. I know it's a cliche now, but shit, I've been saying that since, since guys started dropping like flies. And, it's the mentality you have to take. But we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear from our sponsors. We're going to talk about all of that. We're going to talk about how this team is pulling it off right now, what they've got to do to keep it going, and I guess what's on the horizon as far as what can we expect. But again, a little bit of tangents. Hang tight. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And welcome back. So the aspect of every guy coming through this revolving door and producing, it's been fascinating. Whether it can stand up to the rigors of a major league schedule until the roster is whole again, it's unknown. That's why, you know, the Mets kind of have to take this with a wait, not a wait and see approach, but a roll with the punches approach. There we go. Now, we've talked about the effect that Luis Rojas has had on the process. Even keeled, level headed, you know, that type of stuff rubs off. We were just talking about it with Marcus Stroman. If the guy at the front of the room is confident, you're going to be confident. It's just, that's how leadership works. We've also talked about the benefits of having those tried and true veteran presences. We were just talking about Stroman, Lindor. You know, as things have taken a turn towards the emergency room over the last month or so, we see more and more veteran guys popping in, putting their heads down, and just kind of getting to work. Brandon Drury, even Cameron Maben, who's I think 0-for-25 after Thursday, but you know, he hasn't appeared to let himself get down. He's still out there. I mean, he caught a couple of really tough breaks. You know, the more that the young guys see that type of behavior, and hey, these guys are fighting for their careers. We're fighting for a roster spot before we get sent back down. You know, they're going to take note and they're going to follow suit. That's, again, that's how leadership works. The combination of grit, desperation, and young guys trying to make their mark. you know, magic is happening, but you know, we have to ask ourselves this question realistically: at what point will the wheels just kind of fall off this thing? I talked about what might need to be done to keep this momentum up a little bit on Wednesday at the Apple. You know, the question is, you know, can this group withstand the huge disadvantage of playing with this short deck until everyone's back? That's a good question. And right now the answer is maybe. as we said, Rojas has done a really, really great job of keeping everyone focused. It's been just a shitstorm, one freaking thunder bomb after another. And you know, this team is just, they're enduring, they're getting through it, they're making it work. We've also talked about the benefits of not getting too far ahead, not getting overwhelmed by a mountain of tasks ahead of you with, again, a very, very short roster. You know, the headspace that this team kind of needs to be in right now is get that win today, go back out there tomorrow and do your best to do it again. Like, That's how I wake up every day. And you know, I guess that underdog mentality, which is kind of what's taken hold here. It's endearing to the everyman. At least you hope so. But the question is, again, will it be enough? I know we just talked about not looking too far ahead, but you know, you look into June and you know, that schedule is just, it's daunting. I think the Mets play the Padres 7 out of their first 9 games in June. Then you head to, I think you're back home. You face the Chicago Cubs, who are, I think they're, if not a half game out of first, tied for first in the Central. You know, this group may need a few more pieces, or at least like higher end pieces, before they jump into that water, man. Like, this is going to be a tough stretch of games. And yeah, you know, I think, you know, right now, of course, they're doing terrific, but pitching will only get the Mets so far, as we've seen. You know, I think they won, maybe they're scoring 3 runs a game. I don't have an average in front of me. Maybe I'm coming unprepared today. I don't know. I hope I just roll through it. But, you know, maybe it's time for Zach Scott to begin kind of looking for, an upscale addition to kind of, I guess, keep this team afloat, keep them going. I know everyone's been using that phrase lately. I put it in a title like last week and just keep on saying it. It's like, oh, now I can't go back to it again. But anyway, you know, Tim Britton over at The Athletic, friend of the pod, of course, he rattled off a couple of intriguing names. Eduardo Escobar, who plays all over the infield, big power threat. There's going to be other guys out there. There's going to be a lot of options as teams kind of fall further and further away from contention. You know, whichever way that this organization decides to go, it's going to have to be a fluid situation. You know, we're watching it with Cameron Maben. There's a reason that some of these guys were available, that the Mets took him from the Cubs for $1. You know, that's not a knock on Maben. He's just getting his feet wet. If he picks it up, he could really be a good bench piece down the road. It's just that if the Mets are going to be without Conforto and without McNeil and waiting on Nimmo and Davis to kind of come back and reassimilate, you know, there's going to be gaps to fill. Contingency moves. Are they going to keep on to, you know, they're going to have to be made. The revolving door that we were just talking about, you know, it's going to keep on turning. But if there's a big move to be made, you kind of have to go out there and do it. I don't know what that is or what it would take to, say, land a quote-unquote big fish, but is now not the time to kind of take that chance? The pitching staff's been outstanding. You know, you kind of have to support that consistency and make a push. You know, we've kind of seen this movie before. In the past, you lose a sizable portion of your quarter injuries. That meant your season was pretty much over. You know, now that situation has changed a little bit. You know, under Steve Cohen, this team has the resources to kind of make a move if they want to. Jesus Christ, what am I at LaGuardia? There's a plane like right over my house. My goodness. So, you know, why not go out and really make a push? You know, this team has the flexibility, I guess you could say, to add contracts. They've got a stable of high-end, albeit low-level prospects to dip into if the situation calls for it. Go ahead, poke around. You know, Zach Scott mentioned this week, he'd been working the phones nonstop. You'd have to think that Billy McKinney wasn't the only fire the Mets had their iron in. And it's not like they need to go out and trade for like a Chris Bryant. That would be nice, but I doubt the Cubs and we're going to move him now. Or someone like ridiculously high end. Of course, it would be great and it would be huge. But one, what would it cost? And two, you know, a Gregory Polanco, we talked, I think I mentioned him on Twitter. Or like, I don't know if he's available now, but a Starling Marte. Oh, did he re-up in Miami? I have no idea. Anyway, you know, someone who fits that kind of second tier level, not from the bottom of the tank. And again, I hate to refer to guys like Cameron Maven as that, but it's kind of what the situation is. You know, if you can go out and find a true second tier player, you got to kind of go out and ruffle some feathers and see what's out there, man. Like, I don't know. I have no idea who you could even rattle off here that would make sense in that situation. But, you know, it all depends on if the Mets think that they can stay above water until everyone comes back. And, you know, who knows when that's going to be. This regime really hasn't been all too forthcoming with injury statuses, as we've seen. And, you know, and that's fine to an extent, too. Speaking of which, excuse me while I take a sip of water. Joe Girardi on Thursday flat out told the Phillies media corps that he'd no longer be sharing information with them pertaining to managerial decisions, personnel decisions, anything. He said he's doing things a little different. I think that was part of his quote. So who's available, who's not, who's hurt, why he made a decision in-game, why they made a roster decision, none of it. He says he's going to change things up, which is, it's wild. Like, I get the secrecy and I get the competitive advantage part of it. I really do. But Girardi just comes off like such a dick doing it. And that's, you know, I've never really been a fan of Girardi. But at least like when Louis Rojas does it and he's flat out open about it, he's like, yeah, I wasn't truthful with you guys because we saw it as a competitive disadvantage. And I understand that. And, you know, at least Rojas does it with a little charm. And it was like, oh, well, okay. You know, and I'm sure the beat writers had take exception with that, but it is what it is. You don't want to let out too much. Look at the NHL. You don't have injury reports. You have the guy has an upper body injury or a lower body injury, or that's even if you get that far. Especially in the days of COVID, they were even being more obtuse about it. Or that's probably not the right word, but anyway, you know, bottom line is the chances are the bottom will fall out of this thing sooner or later. Expecting another, I think the Mets are 15-9. Yeah, oh, I put it up on Twitter. I checked. So I'm sure of it. The Mets are 15-9 in May. They're running on AAA level fumes. Expecting them to continue this would you know, that would be a little insane. You can't bank on that happening. Is it possible? Of course, we just saw it happen. Is it unlikely? Yeah, you bet your ass. Like, you know, to expect, you know, maybe the pitching. Of course, this pitching staff's been terrific. But, you know, you can't expect Francisco Lindor in the current state he's in. By the way, you guys got to check out Disha Thosar, another friend of the pod. She's a new columnist over at the Daily News, I guess. I don't know if this is going to be in addition to her beat responsibilities, but she's doing a weekly column too. And if you guys have checked out Disha's work, my goodness, again with the planes right over my window. I feel like I'm at Shea. Keith Hernandez, I'm with you right now, my man. All right, I'm getting back in the box. Disha has taken on column writing responsibilities, and her first one was, I guess, a bit kind of a jab at Francisco Lindor. He started off very, very slow. I don't want to ruin the premise, but she doesn't hold back any punches, and she's not wrong. She's really not. I mean, you can have confidence that he's going to find his way, but you can also be a little frustrated, at least from a fan's point of view, that you're not getting production when you kind of need it the most. But highly recommend that. You have an offense running on him and Dom Smith, who kind of hasn't been the same guy he was last year, but who has he's had flashes. Dealing with a silly right knee injury, it seems like he hurt his knee doing that slide on Tuesday, or sliding into home, and I think Gary Cohen called it a useless slide, which I think that's the most animated I've heard him talk about a slide in recent times. But, you know, you can't expect these guys to be like, okay, well, now you're the centerpiece of the team, and boom, you have to produce. Not all of them. In Lindor's case, you'd kind of hope for it. He was given a very big contract to be that guy. Right now, you know, everyone kind of needs him to be that guy. His track record speaks for itself. There's no lack of confidence on at least on my end that he'll come around. But sooner rather than later, because you have to reinforce this bottom line. Make a push for greatness. Even when guys start coming back, if you have if you go out and make a big move, and now you have that guy on your bench too, and you can keep on shuffling the deck and keep on, you know, cranking out good, really quality players, that's going to be a boon, especially in this season where you have, guys dropping like flies around the league, some places more than others. Look at New York, just for instance, but there's no telling if this is going to be a continuing trend as the season goes on. You know, having the extra capable depth and not just hoping to find a guy in the minors who's not quite ready, but maybe jumps in and gets his feet wet and he does okay or whatever. You know, hoping and praying is a lot riskier than just going out and being aggressive and making that move. So go ahead, make the move. You got the Braves coming in this weekend. They have their own injury issues, but still, this is a very big series. 2.5 games, which the Mets have in hand right now, or as a lead right now in the division, that can evaporate really quickly. So either you're adapting or you're dying, and that's nature. So, if I'm Zach Scott and Sandy Alderson, I am exploring all of my options, and I'm certainly not gun-shy to go out there and make them make a big move. Even, overpay if you got it. You do what you have to do right now. There's too much talent here, and things have gotten off, all things considered, and of course, it could be a lot better, but guys, 24-20 with a fucking AAA roster and 2.5 games up in the division, pushing June, ain't half bad. We'll be back on Monday, hopefully with a little more magic to speak of. Until then, let's fucking go Mets. Have a great weekend, family. Peace.